I don't know about you, but 2020 has felt like a roller coaster of emotions for me. On this show, I've invited life coach Rieko Uesaki to teach us how we can cope with all the uncertainty and changes that are happening in our lives and society right now. Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Tokyo Podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Joe. And on today's show, I'm talking with Rieko Uesaki, who is a therapist and life coach, about a recent blog article she wrote titled Navigating Through the New Norm by Focusing on How You Feel. And I was thinking that, you know, when I read this article, it made me think that, you know, 2020 so far, I think has been a roller coaster of emotions for a lot of people, and probably felt very overwhelming at times. It's almost as if 2020 like keeps getting worse, doesn't it? You know, just when you think something's gonna get better and we're out of like one scenario, something else happens. It's almost like when you're a kid and you wanna yell do-over, like you make a mistake, you're like do-over, and everyone just kinda resets. Like it'd be nice if the whole world could just yell do-over right now and kinda reset 2020 again, but I feel like I can imagine that a lot of people around the world right now are struggling with emotions and thoughts that maybe they haven't dealt with before. And I know for me, it's sure making 2020 feel super long. Like 2020 feels like it's been 3 years long for me so far, and we're only like halfway through the year. So I'm a little bit worried that, like, for the rest of the year. But reading Diego's article kind of made me think about, you know, what can we do to deal with all the changes that are happening in our lives right now?
One of the key things to know about adjusting to a new norm is that we all have this thing called conditioning. And what conditioning is a construct of cultural, societal, you know, familial, personal set of rules and experiences that shapes our own like to-dos and not-to-dos and what to think, what not to think, and what to feel and what not to feel. And often it does operate on autopilot. So what you feel on a day-to-day basis or what you do on a day-to-day, you're probably not thinking too much into it. You just do it because that's what you know and that's what you're conditioned to do.
Right. Some of it's like almost automatic, right? Like if you see a spider on the floor, you might just like jump back and freak out. You're not even really thinking about it. Mm-hmm. Especially if you're Australian like you guys.
I'm not quite an Australian, but a lot of my Australian friends do call me an honorary Australian. So I'm going to stick to that. But yes. So
it's a good point. Like, yeah, like a lot of times when we go through life, I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of people don't kind of think about their reactions, mm-hmm. or maybe even where that reaction might have originated from. Why did I react this way? Where did that come from? Right? We just react because we've been doing that, you know, that way for as long as we can remember.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So the spider example that you brought up is exactly it. Is that, you know, we're taught that spiders, well, especially in Australia, they're super deadly. So you're not allowed to go anywhere close to them.
So you're saying that when people see a spider, there's kind of a automatic response that gets triggered inside them?
Mm-hmm. And it's you're not necessarily thinking as to why. You just react.
You're not thinking like consciously, right? Like you're not like planning out what you're going to do.
Exactly. Yeah. So your like frontal cortex, which is like the front side of your brain, it gives you like an automatic response as opposed to like, oh, should I, you know.
What should I do when I see this deadly spider here? You know, what's interesting is I remember reading a study a long time ago saying that your brain can't even tell the difference between what's real or what's not, because your reaction is the same whether you see a real spider or you think you see a spider, right? Like if you, like you're cleaning your house or whatever and like a piece of dust moves and you think that's a spider, you're going to react the same as if it was a real spider. Mm-hmm. So your brain doesn't really know the difference.
Yeah, that's also a power of conditioning. And sometimes, you know, it can obviously save your life. But if it's not a life-threatening situation, it can do a bit of not necessarily damage, but it can cause a lot of friction in between how you feel and how you want to act. So
can you give an example?
Yeah, sure. So I think conditioning and another thing called ego that people often sort of throw egos around are quite tight knit in a sense that, say, for example, if you've had a not so pleasant experience with a specific person and you remember that person's personality, what that person looked like, how they acted, their body language, you do remember those little things because you don't want to essentially go through that unpleasant experience again. Right, and so that becomes ingrained in your brain as like a reflex, right? Because you're trying to defend yourself, protect yourself. And so when you meet another person, maybe similar sort of body language, that person may have a completely different personality. But because you're picking up on those little cues that triggers your memory, your ego of your previous encounter with that unpleasant person. And you might miss out on the opportunity of actually knowing this new person who may have something similar, but also may have a completely different persona.
Well, yeah, that's interesting. But how would you overcome that? Because I imagine that's evolved from our survival instinct, right? Because our ancestors on the plains of Africa, if they see a lion one day, it eats their buddy the next day, right? Like, then they're probably like, okay, that's an animal that we need to avoid. So if you can't remember that, and you're wandering around a week later and you come across another lion, you're not going to be like, hey, maybe this one will be different, right? So how can we kind of, you know, train our mind to think differently?
It's a really good question. But I think what we need to focus then is how, you know, when you meet someone for the first time and you have this like gut inkling that this person might be a bad person or this person might deserve a chance from me. And I think that gut feeling is not necessarily the same as your ego reflex of trying to protect yourself. So if you feel that your gut is telling you something else that your ego is not telling you, then that difference can be reconciled. And how to do that is to possibly reach out to that seemingly unpleasant person, get to know him or her. And that action in itself, you're trying to bridge the gap in between your ego and your knowing.
Okay. So you're saying like maybe go with your gut more?
Mm-hmm. And gut is where, you know, I think most of people's instinct, which is like your emotions, come from. Ego isn't necessarily your emotions per se. It's oftentimes a trigger of your past trauma or your, you know, something that happened in the past that just left a mark in you that you don't want to go and repeat again.
Right. Okay. So what you're saying then is, yeah, it makes sense. So then if instead of like re-triggering that same emotion, when you meet someone who's maybe not, you know, maybe triggered a previous negative emotion, you're saying is kind of try to create a new emotion with that person.
Mm-hmm. So that action in itself is sort of what we touched on earlier today, which is conditioning. You're unlearning your conditioning by reaching out to that person.
Right, right.
Interesting. Right, and you're relearning, I guess you're relearning by unlearning.
Right.
Yes, exactly.
It's like the old cliche saying of like the lines in a record player, right? Like you're just basically creating a new line.
Yeah.
The needle on the record player to follow along. That's a lot harder to do in real life, though, than it is, right?
Yeah, it requires a set of tenacities and skill sets for sure. But it's definitely worth doing, I think.
And it's something that's probably quite unique to humans, I imagine. Like, we're able to kind of retrain our brains and our responses because we can consciously think about it and take action in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
So So what you're saying is like what this pandemic and what's going on now, our response to it is based on our response to previous uncertain times?
Yeah, that could be it too. Or if you ever dealt with uncertainty, you experienced some type of trauma, or maybe sometimes if you have a not so pleasant experience being at home for too long, that may trigger something. Or if a lot of your energy comes from being outside, being with people, you know, and being at home could sort of trigger that self-defense mechanism as well. So what's very important in kind of navigating through uncertainty is to sort of learn what your egos and conditionings are, and then try and sort of unlearn them. And when I say this, it sounds very complicated, but in actuality, what we really are trying to achieve is to be kind and be compassionate. And it sounds such a cliche when I say it, but compassion isn't dismissive, but ego and conditioning can be very dismissive. Mm. And so by practicing compassion, you're essentially embracing your ego and conditionings as well. And that radical way of embracing yourself is the most simplest way to unlearn what you know from your past and sort of move forward from it.
Right. Yeah. It's probably the fastest way to do that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And probably the hardest way at the same time.
True. But, you know, I think adjusting to a new norm does require a sort of unlearning. And that's right. Where people tend to experience a lot of friction within because their egos never wants to change. You know, they just want to be comfortable in your brain. But your gut feeling is eventually going to tell you that your inner knowing and your ego isn't aligned. And so that ego sort of needs to be embraced and needs to be let go.
Let's talk about the list that you created on your blog. And mm-hmm. The first thing that you mentioned was learn about yourself.
Yeah, it's a very simple three words with a lot of depth to it, I think. But learning about yourself is one of the most important thing if you're ever going to really do anything or work on your mental well-being muscle or practice compassion. And I think it really is the first step. It's like opening the doorway into practicing compassion is learning about yourself. And a lot of people struggle to do so because they've either never done it or they just don't know where to start. So I have put a link onto my blog post, which can sort of work as an indicator of who you might be. So it's definitely like a take it or leave it sort of result that you get out of it, because it is coming from a certain set of database. But I'd say take the test, sleep on it, and take what's relevant and block out whatever's not.
Yeah, you're talking about the MBTI test, right? The 16 personalities MBTI test. And this test, I think, is interesting. I took it numerous times and I always come up with the exact same result, which is the INTJ.
Right.
And, you know, my feeling with these tests are like, there's seems like two large groups of people on these tests. Some people who completely dismiss all these kind of tests outright. And then other people who take it as gospel and they're like, yes, this is me. And, you know, so my feeling with these tests, any kind of personality tests, is that take it with a grain of salt. But if some aspects of it resonate with you, then explore more about that that aspect and why you feel that that resonates with you, because you might learn. It was like a kind of an easy way to learn a lot more about yourself that you may not have known beforehand.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. Some people do take it as a gospel. and some people completely dismiss it, like you said. But it really is a set of, you know, data base, right? So I definitely say, as you said, take it with a grain of salt.
I think it's a good starting point. Because I think, like, when you say something like, you know, like, learn about yourself, I think that's a hard thing for people to even start with. Like, what do I, you know, what food do I like? Like, do I like cats or dogs? Or, you know, like, what do I start with, right? So I think these kind of tests kind of give you a good starting point. Like, for example, for me, when I took this test and I found out I was an INTJ and I started to research more about that, and the I stands for introvert.
Yeah.
And I never really knew I was an introvert. I just thought I hated people. And I was like, I had no problem with that. Like, up until I was like, I don't know. I just thought I was like, I just don't like people. And I don't see anything wrong with that. You know, like, I didn't think much about it. You know, just like, I just thought I was kind of like antisocial. And like, yeah, okay. So every now and then I kind of think, like, maybe I should try to be a bit more social, or maybe, you know, maybe this is a little bit strange or whatever, that I prefer to spend time alone or whatever. Because, of course, in society, you see a lot of extroverted thinking and extroverts on display, right? So, you know, so I remember a long time, many times, like, especially when I was younger, I kind of struggle with it. Like, you know, maybe I should try to be more social. And I would go to events, I go to parties. I'm like, I hate this. I hate these people. I'm going to go back to my room. And it wasn't until I kind of took that test and I realized, like, oh, wait, this is why I feel this way.
Right.
And then when I started to kind of research more about introverts and I found like all these different introvert groups online, I was like, this is great. These are my people. I don't want to meet any of you, but I love chatting with you online. You know, like, it was fantastic. So that allowed me to kind of realize why I react in certain situations.
Right. Yep.
And so that was a really big revelation for me, because then it kind of allows me to think, okay, so now I understand why I react in this situation. Mm-hmm. I can learn to change it if I want to, because to be honest, I'm super happy being an introvert. I don't know why everyone doesn't want to be an introvert. It's fantastic, you know? So like, I don't really want to change that aspect, but I recognize, like, okay, so I don't end up like a hermit in my house with like 900 cats. I do have to every now and then go out and interact and try to meet people. And even if I feel uncomfortable with it, but I'm like, I know why I feel uncomfortable with it. So I'm okay with that. And then I'm also okay with, like, in the middle of a party or whatever, I'm like, bye, I'm going home, and I'm just leaving. You know what I mean? Like, before I would like, oh, I should probably stay to the end or whatever, say goodbye to everybody. Now I'm like, nope, energy level down, see ya. And I just leave. And I'm totally happy with that. So learning that aspect of my life just from taking this test and being able to just even knowing about this, I didn't ever knew there was a thing called introvert extrovert beforehand. So just finding that out was a huge revelation for me. And it really has benefited my life quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. It really does work as an indicator per se, I think. When you know why you do certain things, it does give you, again, like the sense of certainty, which is really the point of learning about yourself. So that's really great.
Yeah, that's a good point. When you know why you do certain things, like, that's a really good starting point. And if you don't, if you don't figure that out, you're going to have a tough time kind of making changes to your life.
Yeah.
But yeah, to your first point, like, learn about yourself. For me, I think two things that's really taught me a lot about myself is learning about the INTJ and kind of exploring all those, the different things that it tells me. And it also too was just living in other countries. You know, Japan's like the third country I've lived in that's not my home country. Mm-hmm. And putting myself in all these kind of uncomfortable and strange situations has really taught a lot about myself, taught me a lot about myself. And like you said, like, how I react to things and why I react to certain things, and then how I can kind of change that depending on where I am. But that's been it for me. But someone who's not able to kind of relocate to a whole other country, what kind of strategies would you suggest?
I think sort of understanding. So we all go through day to day, but seeing your day to day things from sort of like a different perspective, right? So when you do something, I know it takes a bit of tenacity to do this, but when you're going through your day to day, think of the reasons why you feel certain things. And one of the emotions that I would love for people to sort of tune into a little more is anger. And anger tells you a lot more about you than you think. And the reason why is anger is essentially, again, sort of like an ego response, it's a trauma response, right? That's you trying to defend yourself from something that has happened to you, or that someone has said something to you that was hurtful, and you're trying to defend yourself. And so when you're trying to protect yourself, it's really telling you something. So when that anger response happens, think, okay, I feel angry. I feel very defensive. I feel protective. Why am I feeling this way? What's triggered inside of me?
But can't they just like say like it's because that like someone cuts you off in traffic? I'm like, well, I'm angry because this idiot cut me off. Like, how does that tell me about me?
Okay, yes, yes, I get that. But take it one step further. I think when someone cuts you off, are you really angry because someone cut you off? Or is it because someone significant has cut you off before and that has left like a pain or hurt inside of you? And so when someone cuts you off, you feel that sense of abandonment, perhaps. And maybe that person who you were talking to then, their intention wasn't to make you feel upset. Maybe they had just a really bad signal. But the fact of the matter is your trauma response would say, oh, that person just abandoned you.
So like you're just taking that past trauma and putting it on the current situation.
Mm-hmm. And anger oftentimes is right. That. So from there, you can learn about, so essentially that's learning about you, right? It's like digging down your pain hole, essentially, and understanding what bothers you, what really does give you that sense of pain and hence protectiveness.
Yeah, I think a good exercise to do that for someone listening would be to, I mean, obviously it's hard to do that like in the spur of the moment, right? Like if someone cuts you off, you know, it's hard to like, okay, I'm going to zen out and think about why this is making me upset. But I think what the audience could do is try to think about what makes you upset on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you get upset at something, like if you're going to work and every day you get upset, someone cuts you off, then yes, that's, you know, something to think about that. Or if something happens quite regularly in your life and that makes you upset, that's a good time to kind of imagine, like maybe later on, think back on it and go, why does this make me so upset?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that feeling of upset, anger, like those things, those triggers are a very good first steps into learning
about yourself. Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's really interesting. Okay. So first step is to kind of find out about yourself. And I think this is, a really good idea too, because I think the more you can learn about yourself, the more you can kind of plan the direction of your life. And I think putting yourself in uncomfortable and unusual situations is a good way to kind of learn a lot about yourself as well. So,
And I think when you're not used to learning about yourself,
You're
trying to do that, That's putting yourself in an extremely uncomfortable position. So I think that in itself would provide people with very different perspectives.
So once you've learned about yourself, the second thing on your list is, you say that list the emotions that trigger your positivity.
Yes. So we all have, you know, emotions, right? Like we feel things all the time and it changes all the time as well. But we do have this like surface level emotions, which is something that goes moment from moment. And some things that you feel very deeply about. For instance, I think gratitude is something that we all feel quite deeply. Joy, as opposed to happiness, something that we feel sort of very deep down in our gut. That's the list of emotions that you want to try and put down on your list.
Like when you feel those things or what?
Not when, just a list of sort of emotions in itself. So,
emotions or things that you do that trigger those emotions?
So trigger comes after this.
So you're right now list emotions, just your emotions that cause positivity? Like
correct.
Joy, gratitude, happiness, those kind of things?
Correct, yeah. Okay. So that's, I think, quite straightforward for many. What brings positivity to anyone is, you know, happiness and gratitude and joy and sometimes even, you know, like appreciation, all those things that we call beautiful. I think those emotions will be on your list naturally.
Right. Okay. All right.
So that's, I guess that's quite straightforward.
Yeah. And then, so when you have this list, what do? Go around and show it all your coworkers and say, hey, do this. No.
Yeah, that's, I guess, yeah. Why not if that works? But you can also do that for you too, for yourself. So
you have this list, and then your next step is like kind of a two-parter. You say like, what are your thinking, or what goes through your mind when you're feeling these emotions, and what is it that you're doing when you experience these emotions?
Yeah. So the example that I've given on the blog is, for example, like if I'm thinking about the people in my life that I love in my life, I do feel a sense of gratitude. And what actions am I taking when I feel a sense of gratitude is when I'm serving other people, if I'm trying to support other people. And so this is some of the things that I would challenge everyone to try and take a crack at. So say, for instance, if you have joy on your positive emotions list, when you feel that sense of joy, what is it that you're thinking about? Is it, I don't know, spending quality time with your partner? Is it hanging out with your friends? Is it going traveling? What is it that you're thinking in your mind? And then the next step is, what is it that you're doing when you feel joy? Is it, sometimes for me, it's dancing. So is it dancing, or is it cooking? Is it eating? Is it talking to people? Or is it making someone smile? Like, what is it that you're doing when you feel that joy?
You know, it's a really interesting point, because I think a lot of people probably don't put as much priority into this as they should. And, you know, I think maybe part of that is they just kind of get caught up in the day-to-day of life. And you don't kind of prioritize time and effort to do things that you generally feel really great about. As adults. Kids do this all the time, right?
Exactly.
Like you tell a kid to go clean his room, and then you go up there in 10 minutes, and what's he doing? He's playing with the toys in his room instead of cleaning it up, right? Because he's like, why would I want to clean this up? This is more fun, right? So kids just do this naturally. And as we become adults, I think we kind of lose this. Like, I think in almost some ways, like, we kind of feel guilty in a way of focusing on things and doing things that make us happy. I think it's like for adults, it's like, I remember like when I ran my car wash business, I ran my business for like 10 years in Vancouver, and had like all these executives are my clients. And I remember like seeing some of them come into the company and like their company, they're starting off, and I would, you know, they've been a client for a long time, so I would kind of see them as they progress through their career. And I remember like thinking like how many of them seem to almost brag in a way how busy they were as they got like further up the corporate ladder. And they're like, I mean, when they first came into the company, they're all excited and like, you know, they're, you know, we'd always talk about what they're doing, and they're going skiing and they're doing all this kind of stuff. And then as they went further up, they seem to have like less and less time. They always stand out of time. But it's almost like they were kind of bragging about how busy they were.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking like, you don't sound very happy. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
But I think it's kind of like, I don't know about in Japan, but in corporate America, it seems like it's almost like a kind of like a badge of honor, so to speak, to be like so busy and, you know, like it's looked down upon to pursue happiness in your life.
That's a really good point, Anthony. I mean, I think I personally don't like the word busy, and I don't use it personally. And in Japanese, if you write busy in kanji, we write it as lose our heart. That's exactly how that kanji's constructed.
What? It means lose your heart?
So on the left side, we write heart, and then on the right side, we say we lose, like lose as in death. Lose.
Wow, interesting, huh?
So, I mean, I think when we get so used to saying we're busy, what we're essentially practicing is losing a part of ourselves. And that to me is extremely alarming.
It's death. It's death of your inner child. It's death of your pursuit of fun.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, like when you look back as a kid and when you were like going crazy, like playing because you're so happy and joyful, adults often usually come to you and say, be careful with that. Yeah. Watch out on that. And I think that's where like early conditionings actually do start.
Right.
And I completely understand, like, if you're a parent, you do have to watch out for your kid, and that's your job. So I completely get how you would. But it's something that we can all be aware of once we grow up, that our conditionings do start from there, I think. And so when we're happy, you know, we often sort of limit our happiness. Because we have to be careful of something, or we have to be mindful of other people who may not be as happy as we are. Because people don't necessarily amplify your happiness anymore.
Yeah.
If you're a kid, they would.
They would, yeah.
But as adults, it's very rare to find someone who would. But when you're sad or, you know, just hurt or in pain, and even as a child, when you're really sad, no one tells you to be careful. You know, like they would just be there to comfort you until you feel better, right? So there's no limit to your pain. There's no limit to your hurt or your sadness. And because of it, I think we're all used to empathizing with people who are sad. You want to be there for them. And you want to support them, which is a beautiful thing. But what we need to be mindful when we find ourselves sad is that it's limitless. And happiness is limited. But we can also learn happiness to be unlimited as well.
Wait, hold up. What do you mean? Like, so sadness is limitless, meaning that what? You could just end up spiraling further and further down?
Yeah, exactly. And you can still find empathy from someone, somewhere.
So because of that empathy, you keep kind of going into your sadness more and more. Whereas happiness, there's a limit because the people around you are maybe not engaged with your happiness as much. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, correct. So you can't necessarily amplify your happiness, right, but you can amplify sadness.
Right.
Right. It's just a lot easier that way.
It's like if you go into your office and you announce that your dog died, everyone's going to be like, oh, that's super sad. But if you go into the office and announce that you just won like $1 million in the lottery, people are not going to be super happy for you, right?
They'll probably be more jealous.
They'll be like, oh, good for you. But that'll be about the extent of it, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
But yeah, it's kind of an interesting thing, actually. Like, I think, like, an experiment that I would encourage a lot of the audience to try is to find some kind of sport or activity that they just absolutely love doing and then do it without any feelings of guilt. And you know what? I bet it's actually harder than you think. Because I know for me, when I went back to Canada a couple years ago, one of the things that I love is speed. If I had to put a list on my emotions, adrenaline would be like at the top. So whether it's car, motorcycle, bicycle, whatever it is, I just love that feeling of going fast. So when I went back to Canada, I took up mountain biking. I used to do it as a kid, but I got out of it and I got back into mountain biking. And I remember I was going to like this area called Whistler Bike Park, which is this giant ski park. And I was just like riding all day up and down. And I just remember thinking at one point, like, wow, I'm just like, I just love what I'm doing now. And I kind of like had this slight, like kind of guilty feeling in the back of my mind that I was like, you know, I should really be looking for work right now, you know, because I just moved back to Canada. I wasn't really looking for work that seriously. And I remember thinking like, this is actually kind of dangerous that I'm having so much fun when I should be like looking for work. And then I thought, like, why? That's so stupid. Like, this is, I'm having so much fun. I'm like having a, like a kid in a, like a sand pit type of fun, you know? But there's that kind of adult responsibility that's kind of in the back of your mind thinking like, maybe I'm having too much fun. Maybe I should just, you know, have work.
Right.
But then I kind of like, luckily I'm so immature. I managed to push that out to the side. And I'm like, screw that. But it was a really interesting emotion to once again have something that like when I'm just like, you know, like when you're just completely in the moment and you're just enjoying every aspect of it. And I remember like when I lived in Vancouver, I used to have that quite a bit because I had a sports car and a motorcycle. And so like early in the morning, I would go out on some mountain roads, just me and my bike. And it was just like, I just felt like one with the bike and with the road and all that, you know. And then I kind of lost that in the last 10 years that I lived overseas. So it was really fun for me to like rediscover that. And recognize in myself like, oh yeah, so if I'm ever having a bad day or if I just need to trigger some joy in my life, this is the activity I can do. But it was interesting to kind of like have that little bit of guilt in there. I'm like, huh, why am I feeling guilty having so much fun here?
Right. Oh, that's very interesting.
There's a Japanese salaryman inside me. See, I spent 7 years in Japan. The celery man crept in.
It did the trick.
Yeah. But I really encourage the audience to try. Like, if you like something, I think it's just even try to find something that you are that passionate about that you could just, like, you're like a kid in doing that activity and try to do it with, like, just no guilt and just as much fun as you can. And ideally, try to find other people who kind of have the same feeling. I was really lucky that when I went back to Canada and started mountain biking, I met this like 19-year-old kid on the trail one day, and we started riding together. And if you ever want to feel old, start doing stuff with young people for one, you know. But if you ever want to have that kind of feeling of just complete joy, just do it with young kids. Like, they're just so much, they just have no feelings of responsibility or anything, you know. They're just like, let's just do this. I remember I came out with like some of his younger, even younger friends once. They're like 16, 17 years old, you know? And I just like, I remember riding with these guys thinking like, boy, they just have like, they're just like totally in the moment there. Meanwhile, I'm old. So I'm worried about like, am I going to crash? If I crash, it's going to hurt. And, you know, all this other kind of stuff. But they're just like completely in the moment. And I remember thinking like, wow, that's really interesting. If I could, you know, I want to try to retain that feeling as long as I can.
Yeah, definitely. I think what you managed to do there is to create your own safe haven, which is what everyone can use a bit of, for sure.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So is that number three on your list? Is like when you have this emotion list from number two, you start to think of things that can you can do to trigger those emotions?
Yeah. Yeah. So basically, this is to sort of identify your thought process and your actions, and then sort of streamline it altogether. So you know how to think and what to do to feel that sense of joy or gratitude or happiness or whatever positive feelings that you may want to feel.
So that way you can trigger those anytime?
You can start practicing by streamlining this process and then sort of... So essentially, like, what this is it's what streamlining does is that the positive feelings are essentially like compassion, right? You're giving kindness to yourself. You're quieting your ego and you're trying to be kind to yourself. And that in itself is radical. It's just you're radically embracing yourself. And that's compassion. And so what you're trying to do here is to really amplify that emotion of joy and happiness and all the positivity that equals compassion for yourself.
So right, because allowing yourself to feel those emotions?
Yes, and then by practicing those through your mind, right, because you know now what triggers your joy, your happiness, your positive emotions, and you can also now know what actions you need to take in order to feel those positive emotions. Like, you're essentially giving yourself a gift of joy, a gift of gratitude, a gift of kindness, and that in itself is an act of compassion.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. For me, it was, you know what it was? It was recording my rides. I started a YouTube channel when I started mountain biking. And I started recording my rides. And I did that mainly just because I get joy watching my old videos. Because I can relive the situation, you know, again later on.
Right.
So anytime I kind of need a boost or something, I can just literally go watch my old videos. And since it's me on the video, I can, you know, I remember how I felt. It's a good way for me to kind of trigger those emotions all over again.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's really great.
Okay. Number four is, once you've listed your mind in action, it's time to see if you can find any consistencies or similarities on your list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so just to, I guess, give you an example is in step three on the blog, the example I gave was, I am thinking about all the people that I love in my life when I feel a sense of gratitude. And in terms of actions, I am doing something for others when I feel gratitude. Right. So in step four, and say, for instance, in step three, I have another list that may say, I feel kindness when I'm listening to a friend in need of support. Right. And so basically what triggers gratitude for me is I'm thinking about the people that I love and I'm doing something for others. When I feel a sense of kindness is when I'm listening to a friend who needs me. Mm. So essentially what you see is a type of pattern. And the pattern is, I feel this positive emotions in my gut feeling when I'm serving for others. Right, so I can sort of bundle that up together as my action plan. So in step three, I think it was more specific. Right. What is it like? Is it dancing? Is it cooking? Is it writing? Like for you, it's writing. Like, I think it was more specific. But in step four, by sort of merging them and bundling them together, you now have a bigger pool of things that you may be able to do to feel those positive emotions.
Wait, what do you mean merging them together?
Like merging them, so bundling them together. So for example, that I gave you earlier is that I am doing something for others when I feel a sense of gratitude, right? That's my list one. My list two is I feel kindness when I'm listening to a friend who needs support.
Right.
And so listening to a friend who needs support essentially means I'm serving for others.
Okay. I get it. Okay.
Right. And doing something for others when I feel gratitude, essentially you're serving for others as well. So putting those two together basically means I feel kindness and gratitude when I'm serving for other people. Right. So it's no longer a specific list, like I am listening to a friend, but more I am serving for others. Right. So I think for you, perhaps you had writing, right? And then you were saying something else. You said writing. Is there anything else that you may have put down on the list that you can think of?
Like I like kind of helping people get into the sport of mountain biking.
Right.
Like one of the things that I liked about mountain biking that surprised me actually when I went back to Canada is just the diversity of people that are in it. It's not just a bunch of young dudes, which is what I thought it was. There's all kinds of people in mountain biking. So one of the things that I actually enjoyed was helping people get into the sport. So I started like a beginner mountain bike club. And now those rides are obviously not very adrenaline filled because they're all beginners, right? But I enjoyed seeing people come out and get into the sport and learn about it and even maybe push themselves a little bit beyond their comfort zone into either their fitness or trying something that they might not have normally tried. To me, that was a lot of fun.
Right. You think you said a whole bunch there. So what I picked up on it is I think you enjoy connecting people to something that they might possibly love to do.
Right.
You also like to sort of ignite people's passion.
Right, yeah.
So I think for me, where I stand is that you also enjoy sort of doing things for other people and helping them and building. I think community building is also helping others support one another. And you also, I think you're very good at, you know, from the very short time that I've known you, you're very also good at like believing in other people's potential as well, is what I'm gauging. So essentially all that bundled up together, you know, you're essentially sort of,
I'm a guru. I am Yoda of mountain biking. Woohoo! No, actually, that's an interesting point. You know what? I was talking to a friend of mine who lives in the Netherlands about kind of opportunities there, and she kind of said the same thing. Actually, she said that yeah, you enjoy inspiring people through your work. Mm-hmm. And you know what? That's honestly not something I ever had given much thought. But when I think about it, it is really true. I do enjoy helping people achieve things in any way that I can. I think part of that reason is because I was helped a lot when I was younger in my early entrepreneurial days by people who are more successful than me. So I always like to kind of turn around and kind of offer help as well. But I never really thought that I to inspire people through my work. I always kind of looked at it more of a practical thing. Like if someone needs help, I'm like, you know, we're INTJ, right? We're planners, we're schedulers. We know basically how to do everything correctly, right? So I'm always like, yes, dude, here's your action plan, do it. That was kind of my mind. That's what I always thought I enjoyed doing. But I never kind of realized it like through the videos that I create and through the stuff that I do online, even through this podcast. Yeah, like a lot of part of that is like I'm hoping that I inspire someone to take action that they might not have normally taken.
Right. And that's one, like seriously, that is so wonderful. And that's essentially you know, serving for others through yourself. And so that's your nice bundle there that you have.
Right.
In step four.
So my bundle is serving others.
Mm-hmm.
And the action steps would be basically through what I do, right? Through the videos I create, through the podcasts that I create. And
yes.
And the work that I do.
Exactly.
Wow, interesting. Well, I learned something about myself. I should listen to my own show. That's interesting. So once you have this kind of list, what is the last step?
Right. So now that you have something a little more practical, you do want to set yourself a reminder to do them, right? And so what you want to do maybe is if you have a calendar, you want to put like gentle reminders of what you wrote in step four. If you need to take a step back, then go back to step three. And it's, you can go through those steps again and again until you really feel like you get it. And that's okay too. I think everyone has their own pace and time. But if you are comfortable with where you are with step five, just gently remind yourself, you know, of the things that that triggers that positivity in your mind. And this is very, very important, especially when you're navigating through uncertainty, because the only thing that you can control during uncertainty or certainty is what you have, what you know about yourself. You can only control yourself, right? You can never control another person or the environment. So at the end of the day, it's you against you.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So what you really want to do is to practice those positivity, because what that essentially is like you're giving yourself that kindness, that gratitude, that appreciation, that joy. And once you know how to do that, your compassion muscle essentially gets trained, right? And when that compassion muscle gets trained, what then you can do is that you can be compassionate towards other people more so than you are now.
Right, yeah.
And that's what I think we all want to do, is to be kind to ourselves and to one another. Right. So,
but it starts with that yourself, doesn't it? Because if you don't have that compassion for yourself and you don't know what triggers you, you don't know what makes you happy, what doesn't make you happy, it's hard to feel compassion for other people.
Yeah, essentially, yes. You have to be kind to yourself first. And sometimes that's the most difficult thing, especially when you feel lost. And uncertainty gives you that sense of lostness,
right,
per se, right? But when you know yourself, when you know your grounds, then that's when you can really flourish what you know within, what your inner sort of self tells you. And by practicing those kindness and gratitude, you'll be then able to show compassion towards yourself. So you won't be as harsh or unkind or upset with yourself so much. And that's what we all want to try and achieve.
Thanks again to Vieco for coming on the show. And if you want to read her full blog article, I'll make sure I post a link to that from the show notes of this episode. This show has actually gone long already, so I just want to close with a quote from one of my favorite books, which is As a Man Thinketh by James Allen. And the quote is, "Man is buffeted by circumstances so long as he believes himself to be a creature of outside conditions. But when he realizes that he is a creative power, and that he may command the hidden soil and seeds of his being out of which circumstances grow, he then becomes the rightful master of himself. Circumstances do not make the man, it reveals him to himself. And it's a, if you really grasp that, I mean, it's a really powerful statement. And just as a side note, before you go all SJW on me, obviously this was written in 1903. The word man means everybody, right? But, you know, it's 1903. So, but if you really want a fantastic book to read about kind of how your thoughts control your lives and whatnot, pick up the book As a Man Thinketh by James Allen. It's really short. It's not very long. It's written in 1903. But the wisdom in that book is fantastic. So I hope that I hope that this podcast is able to help you if you're going through some issues or some struggles in 2020. And let's just hope that 2021 turns out to be a whole lot better than 2020. But that's it. That wraps up this episode of the Tokyo Podcast. Thanks for listening, everybody. And I'll talk to you next week.